Hello, my name is Jim Judges. I'm a senior academic technologist at the University of Warwick, and this is the LDCU Talking Online Learning podcast, episode 4. In this episode, I had the pleasure of chatting with Becca Stone and Brian Brazzo, who are both from the Faculty of Arts. In this discussion, they introduced me to the digital assessment in the Faculty of Arts project and online resource. I found out about how the project came about, how it was developed so rapidly over the summer this year, and how substantial input from students was key to completing the project on time. We talk about the importance of digital skills, touch on employability and entrepreneurship, and a lot more besides. I should say that if you haven't already visited this inspiring resource, then I'd strongly encourage you to take a look at the web pages, resources, videos, and more that you're about to hear all about. You can either follow the link in the episode notes on the LDCU podcast page, or search in Google for Warwick Faculty of Arts Digital Assessment. It's well worth a look, and I have a feeling that this resource will be a useful template for others to follow, and it will help to further encourage the sharing of practice, as well as prompt the generation of more ideas, discussion, and debate related to digital and alternative assessment here at Warwick. So I'm here with Becca Stone and Brian Brazzo. It's probably best if I ask you to introduce yourselves. So Becca, could you tell us a little bit about your role and work at Warwick?
Sure. I am Becca Stone and I'm a historian and I'm based in the Faculty of Arts. I'm a Senior Teaching Fellow and Director of Student Experience, which means that I do strategy and project work for the faculty as a whole based around the value of an arts degree.
Great. And Brian, could you introduce yourself?
Yes, I'm Brian Brazzo. I'm Senior Teaching Fellow in Liberal Arts. My background is Italian Renaissance literature and philosophy, along with classical reception, but I've also dabbled in the digital humanities for a while. I'm currently Digital Pedagogy Lead in the School for Cross-Faculty Studies. And in that role, I help staff to think through how we can adapt our unique pedagogy in the school, particularly problem-based learning and interdisciplinary approaches, to online teaching in an effective manner.
So I'm interested in finding out about the digital assessment in the Faculty of Arts project. As you perhaps know, this podcast, LDCU podcast, is all about thinking about online learning and everything that goes with that. And of course, assessment and digital assessment is a key part of that. So perhaps you could say, both of you, from your points of view, what it is and how it came about, and we can move on to talk about some of the content and more details.
Yeah, I'm happy to give a bit of background on this. So Beck and I worked together a while ago on the digital literacy certificate in the School for Cross-Faculty Studies. And we worked really closely on that. This was before Beck had her current role. And then ever since, we've said, you know, wouldn't it be nice if we could keep that work up, if we could keep working on that, if we could think of ways to think about digital assessment. And we kept trying to think of different things that we could do. And finally, we said, you know what, with the lockdown happening, with everything that's going on, with the shift to online, we really should do a project on this. Let's try to do a project on digital assessment in the Faculty of Arts, but not just a project where we're telling the students, here's what we should do, but a co-creation project. So really a project that doesn't just involve us, but where we work with students to get their experience and to get them to come up with a project with us to give guidance, not just to students, but also to staff on best practices for digital assessment, really to create a kind of unique toolkit that could be a basis, not just for students doing those assessments, but for staff who wanted to take those assessments and integrate them within their own modules moving forward.
And Becca, what about yourself? How did it come about from your point of view?
Well, as Brian said, we have been working together in this area for several years now, and sort of moving projects forward periodically, but never really getting the time to sit down and really hash something out. But what we decided we needed was a project that would really allow us to hear the students' voice on the faculty's move to digital pedagogy and digital assessment specifically. And that's what this project really was about. We wanted to make sure that as the faculty moves closer to embedding more and more digital assessments onto modules, we had a clear understanding now about what the students thought about that move. Did they like digital assessment? Do they understand digital assessment? Do they want more digital assessment? And really, really crucially, did they feel that they were scaffolded enough in that area? Did they feel like they were getting enough support to actually complete assessments that had a digital focus rather than a traditional essay or an exam?
That's great. And yeah, really exciting to see, by the way. And the finished product that I've had the pleasure of having a look at, we must mention and put a link as well in the introduction to this podcast on the podcast page to make sure people can find it. And great example of co-creation and involving the students, I have to say. So can you can perhaps help me then here, first of all, understanding how you managed to create such a healthy resource with loads of great examples, because that's not easy to do. You need time and help and resourcing. So can you say, how did you go about gathering and creating the resources? What was the process? What did you do?
Well, you say we need time and help and resources, and for this project we had none of those things. The entire project was run between the 1st of July to the 31st of July. And from hiring the students to defining the project, to creating the resource, to getting it up on the website, all was done within 31 days because it had to be. Yeah. We were very, very lucky. We had a WAHIA grant to pay our student team, and that grant ran out on the 31st of July, so we could not push it past that deadline. But our student team, we had a team of 6 students from across the Faculty of Arts, and they were superb. They were absolutely superb, and they are the real reason why this project managed to get to completion in the way that it did. They worked so hard during that month. They really came up with some fantastic ideas.
That's good. And perhaps there's a lesson there for us all, because rather than taking the typical HE approach of, let's spend a few months thinking about it and plan something for 18 months from now, that tight deadline certainly seems to have worked. What about yourself, Brian, on that?
I mean, I would say that it wasn't just the students. I would say it was also kind of, if I can put it this way, Becca's heroic vision for the project. She really put together this amazing set of training workshops for the students to say, look, it's really nice to talk about digital assessments, but digital assessments don't exist, you know, in a vacuum. They exist within the context of higher education. They exist within these contexts where we want to think about things like widening participation, where we want to think about things like accessibility for people who might use technology in different ways, where we want to think about internationalization, where we want to think about all these other things. So Becca put together these wonderful workshops with experts from across Warwick in terms of there was well-being, there was one on tech, there was one on widening participation, and there's one more that I'm forgetting now.
Design thinking,
yes. So she was really able to draw on all of these different strengths, bring in these wonderfully talented people from across the university to help us with this, to provide these workshops for the students. So when they were designing the project, they weren't just thinking about how can I get a podcast up, but they were thinking about all of these different elements, integrating them into assessments and integrating them into modules. And that's why I think for me, the project is just so valuable, because it's not just simply something on, oh, here's yet another instruction for a podcast. It's something that reflects the student voice, and that also reflects, I think, a lot of the really important critical concerns that we have around student involvement in higher education.
Well, I'm sure those students that were involved in that project must have got a lot out of it. And we can perhaps talk about impact and the effect that it's had and how useful perhaps that resource has been since. But I'm always interested, because of my role and the things I tend to think about is thinking about the some of the specific tools and methods of assessments. But can you give us a taste of some of that? What sorts of tools does this resource point towards? What types of assessment methods does it suggest?
Yeah, sure. So in terms of tools, I think it points towards tools that we might think for standard assessments, for example, Audacity for making a podcast or something like that. We also saw it as a way of interfacing with some of the guidance that's come out from the LDCU, from IT services, et cetera, to create that kind of interface to link people to that. So anytime we had a tool, we first looked and saw, well, is there a resource at Warwick that we can link this to? And that was really helpful. So again, tools to build podcasts, to build videos, thinking of things like iMovie, thinking of things like eStream, thinking about things like file sizes when you upload file sizes, you know, thinking about things like transcripts, of course, which is really important. But then the students also made some videos which were about the value of digital assessments to try to say, you know, what are they? Why are they valuable? Why are they helpful? To get both students and staff to think about, you know, why is the traditional model of assessment maybe not something we want to adhere to 100%? This idea of either it has to be 100% essay or 100% exam, could we not maybe rethink that and tell the students, produce something creative, produce something original, you know, try to come up with something new online. It might be a Padlet, it might be, you know, anything really. And then also to create this kind of library of best practices. And this draws on the great work of the Digital Arts Lab, which Becca has been running for the past year, 2 years. I guess
2.5 years now.
So on the website there's a collection of these really excellent things that people are already doing in the Faculty of Arts for digital assessment. The project inspired me within one of my modules. We were going to do in our core module a paradigm shift science fair where the students had to present a poster and talk about it, but of course with COVID that was nearly impossible. So thanks to the project and thanks to what I learned from the project, I was able to transform that assessment into something where the students produced either a Padlet or a PowerPoint or some sort of visual poster online using Canva, creating a PDF, et cetera, and then bringing audio into that. And it was really interesting to allow the students that flexibility to direct them to the resource and to say, I'm not going to be directive. I'm not going to say this has to be a PowerPoint or a Canva. I want to see what you make of it.
Sure.
Rather interestingly, the presentations that we got out of that assessment were actually much more polished than the presentations we would get in class. Yes. Almost none of the students were reading, even though they could have been reading when they did a podcast. It was so much more engaging than you might get in front of the class. And I thought that was, it speaks to something that I feel really strongly about when it comes to learning in the digital world, which is the fact that when we think of the digital world, it actually enables different types of learners. It enables types of learners who I think in the classroom might be a little more shy, might be a little more anxious, et cetera. But if they're recording a podcast from the comfort of their own computer, it may be isolating, but it may allow them to interact and engage more fully with the assessment.
Thanks, Brian. And actually, there's an important point there, isn't there, which you raised, which is about student choice, which is a key component here and certainly something that the digital can offer. Did you have anything to say about that in terms of the tools and methods and even possibly whether you have any examples of using any of those, Becca?
Yeah, from my perspective, it was really important for me that this project would have a legacy. And so within that, I wanted to make sure that was part of the project so that students who are doing digital assessments this year would have a space to go to find out and find support for any tool that they might be using to create a digital assessment and also to find inspiration as to how they might go about doing that. However, it was also really, really important to me that the resource was capable of moving with the times, of being updated as and when other resources and other tools become available or take precedence over what we're using now. So rather than create, as Brian said, a sort of a guide or a how-to on how to use certain tools, what we tried to do was create guides and resources on how to create a podcast, how to go about the idea of creating a podcast. What sort of thing do you need to think about? How do you move in that direction? Why might you include that as a type of assessment on your module? Because the resource is for staff and for students.
Yeah.
Similarly, for other types of digital assessments. So the students created those resources. And then another part of the website is this toolbox in which we highlight certain tools that could be used, but none of them are directive. We really tried to stay away from saying, if you are doing a podcast, you should be using Audacity. We tried to collect together a range of tools that students could use, but also leave space available to update and add to that resource in the future as technology moves on, as it so often does.
I can see as an outside observer how comprehensive your resource is. You've got resources for staff, you've got resources for students, you've got some great checklists, you've got some great examples. And if you dig deep, I myself got lost in some of the examples of student work that you've put there. So it's great. But what about the proof is in the pudding? What about the reception then? What have you found?
Well, I guess it's probably important to note that intentionally, we haven't actually launched it yet. We've done a soft launch. It is available on the faculty website. It sits in the digital arts lab. And so it is there to be used. But on purpose, Brian and I decided that we would not launch the resource officially to staff until we thought staff were ready to start thinking about next year's MA1 forms.
Okay.
Because of the timing of when the resource became available, we were of the opinion that the last thing staff wanted at the beginning of September was a whole new way of thinking about assessment.
Right.
So we
right.
held it back. So
okay.
a lot of staff
That's good
actually,
to know.
I think, aren't even aware that it's there yet. However, right. we have done some soft launches of the resource. As Brian said, it's been shared with staff in cross-faculty studies. And it's also been shared with staff who I already know run digital assessments or who were thinking about changing their assessments to be digital for this year specifically. Yeah. And my role in the Faculty of Arts puts me in a good position to be aware of those staff members. So I shared it privately with those staff members and encouraged them to embed them into the Moodle pages for their module so that the students doing digital assessments this year could engage with the resource.
Yeah.
So without actually having properly launched the website yet, it does see quite a lot of traffic, which I was not necessarily expecting, which is lovely to see, especially yeah. around the toolbox and the sample mark schemes. Back in September, the sample mark schemes that we shared for staff about how to go about marking these different types of digital assessments and how to share that information with students, which was one of the things that our student interns identified as absolutely vital if you are shifting to a digital assessment, is sharing with your students how you will go about marking that yep. digital assessment. That has seen a lot of traffic and a lot of use.
And can I just ask a bonus question? I don't know if you both have a view on this, that is there something special, of course there is, about the Faculty of Arts, are these resources and is this toolbox applicable elsewhere, and will others from other faculties be able to get something out of this? What do you think?
I mean, of course there is something special about the Faculty of Arts. We are the Faculty of Arts, and that in itself is special. However, yes, this resource is absolutely usable by staff in other faculties. And the next step is to expand the recipes section, the section where staff showcase the modules that they have run that include digital assessments. And it's a collection of information just about how they went about embedding those digital assessments into those modules and how other staff members could mirror that work. It's my aim in the second phase of the resource to include examples from staff outside of the Faculty of Arts and how they've gone about doing that for their own modules.
Yeah.
And I think that learning is definitely applicable
yeah.
from the arts to the other faculties as well.
Yeah, I hope so, and I think so. And Mark, what I've seen of it, I would imagine that the majority of it is applicable elsewhere and can be translated into whatever language different faculties might use. So just thinking then about the challenge, and I think you might have mentioned it early on, Brian, perhaps as a positive thing, but am I right in thinking that it might be a concern of certainly a member of staff and a student that the great thing about an assignment and an essay is it's well understood, I know how to do it, I can just get on with it. If I've got to learn how to use some technology or a tool, a new piece of software, then it's a lot of effort and I'm not even sure how I'm going to be assessed. So there's a certain risk. So can you say anything about that? You know, how do you overcome that possibly? Or do you have any thoughts or comments on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think in terms of technology, I do think there's a fear about using new technologies, but students are using technologies all the time, right? Students are writing things in Microsoft Word, even writing itself is a form of a technology, right? A technology that someone like Plato really didn't like and didn't enjoy and wanted to get rid of. So I think that once we start to get students to think not just about the content of their assessments, but also about the form of their assessments, and we get staff thinking about the form of the assessments, what's the purpose of this essay? Is the purpose of this essay even if it's a traditional essay? Is it just to get a student to regurgitate content, to say, here's what I learned in class? Or is it, as we do in the Faculty of Arts, to get students to develop new critical perspectives, to think across disciplines as we do in cross-faculty studies, right? To get students to reflect on the pressing issues and concerns in the world today, and really to develop their own approach to things, to develop their own way of thinking about them. I think that once we see assessment in that way, and we see it as assessment for learning, not assessment of learning, that in a sense that fear goes away, because then the assessment is seen as a kind of activity through which the student grows, and learning new types of technology, new forms, can be really helpful for that. That being said, I also think that staff and student fears can be justified. If someone has a module with a 100% essay or a 100% assessment, and you suddenly change that up, that can be problematic. But of course, I have my own views on assessments. I don't think 100% assessment is ever really a good idea, but that's my own approach. I don't know. Becca, what do you think?
I think it's a really interesting debate, because I do think you make a really good point, Brian, about the fact that there are always new technologies, and there is a limit to how resistant we can be to new technology, because there comes a point when that technology is no longer new, and actually, how far are we disadvantaging our students by not pushing them into that digital realm? And that's a really interesting debate, and it's not one that I necessarily have an answer to. No. However, this is one of the reasons why we did the project, was to find out from students how concerned they were about this move to digital assessment. And our students also canvassed other students in the faculty. They did a questionnaire, and it was an overwhelming response from students that they did want to learn this stuff. They did want to engage in this way.
Yes.
Provided it's properly scaffolded and it's properly managed by the module leader. And again, that is partly what this resource has been created to do, to demonstrate and support staff members in embedding digital assessment into their modules fairly and safely.
But actually, I was just thinking about this idea, because you're talking here about assessment for learning, so formative assessment. But I've been in conversations and thinking about the summative assessment. Does this work feed into alternative assessments for exams as well?
Yeah, I should clarify. When we say assessment for learning, we actually don't mean formative assessment. We mean both formative and summative assessment. Summative assessment can be assessment for learning as well as assessment for grading.
Well, thanks for clarifying that.
We don't have very many exams in the Faculty of Arts at all. Yeah. There are some departments that have no exams, and they are reducing across the other departments as well, with the exception of classics and modern languages, who obviously have language-based tests. We don't do a lot of kind of end-of-year exams in the Faculty of Arts. Even within that, however, we are also looking at how we run exams, and that is specifically because of COVID.
Yes.
They used to be, you know, obviously in a gym somewhere, everybody sat down and wrote for 3 hours with a pen. That's and right. That is in itself problematic, for the simple reason that students today don't write handwrite stuff very often.
Exactly.
So expecting them suddenly to be able to sit down and write for 3 hours is in itself a disadvantage to the students, because they literally do not have the muscles in their hand to support that. Equally, I think Brian's already touched on this, there is a pedagogical debate about what learning happens in an exam. It is simply a test of knowledge, and it's not necessarily always a test of understanding.
Yes.
And one thing that we would like to do is push module leaders to think a little bit more about what is their assessment for. That's why we say assessment for learning.
Gotcha. Thank you for explaining that. And in fact, I'll just ask you, Brian, just to perhaps comment briefly on that, if you can, before we move on.
Yeah, I mean, I think the distinction between formative and summative is a very strange distinction in some fields. This idea between assessments that you do that don't count for much, that, you know, let you practice, and then one assessment that is the summation of all of your learning throughout the year. that, I mean, it's problematic from the student's perspective as well, not only from the perspective of writing an exam, but the idea of what if the student on that day is having a difficult day and doesn't recognize it enough to, you know, claim mitigating circumstances or something like that, to test a year's worth of learning, or at least a term's worth of learning, in 3 hours on one particular day seems somewhat strange. So one of the things we do in liberal arts is our assessment strategy is we have many assessments throughout the year. They're all summative, they all count. But the idea is by doing these multiple assessments, the students are able to try out different methods to engage in different ways, because some students are going to shine when they do a podcast. Other students are going to shine in their written work. Other students will shine in their visual work. And I think one of the things that we try and do, I know that the Faculty of Arts does this, IADL tries to do this as well, is to really engage student creativity. There's a big fear, I think, around assessments. And one of the videos in the resource actually covers assessment cultures, which I think is really interesting and worth having more of a conversation about at an institutional level. But there's a lot of fear in students about, gosh, this assessment is evaluation of everything I've learned. If I fail it, I'm going to be a horrible person. And sometimes breaking through that fear by having a more creative assessment, by getting the students to do something that's engaging and fun. For example, in my quest module, the students have to create their own quest. And it can be as simple as writing a short story, or as complicated as creating a basic video game using branching scenarios in Moodle with H5P. But this allows the students to engage with the material, to play around with it before they write a critical essay. And once you break that ice, the students are actually able to activate all of their knowledge and understanding of that material in a way that's so much more valuable and meaningful, and I think reflects the totality of the student as a person, more so than a particular exam or an essay might.
Thank you for that. And that's interesting to hear about that continuous assessment, lower stakes versus higher stakes approach. And that does mean, therefore, that you can afford, if that's the right word, to perhaps experiment and provide variety.
I was just going to mention, Brian mentioned about giving the students opportunities to do creative assessments and to be creative within those assessments. And that is actually one of the reasons why we ring fence this project into the Faculty of Arts, not specifically because other faculties don't do creative assessments, but because we are not known for doing creativity in the digital sphere in the Faculty of Arts. Our students do not see themselves as connected to the digital arts. They're not computer science students. They're not in that sphere. And actually, one of the things we wanted to highlight with this project and why it is specifically digital assessment in the Faculty of Arts is to demonstrate that the digital world absolutely has a role to play within the arts. The Digital Arts Lab is there to highlight that. And it's something that we really want to get through to for our students and our staff, that this world can be useful and can be relevant to the work that we're doing here in the Faculty of Arts.
Yeah, that's great. And I don't know if it's reading between the lines or if it's more explicit, but it is the case, isn't it, that we're doing the students a disservice if we don't help them to develop confidence and skills with these tools that they must use in whatever they go on to do next, whether that is in the field of education, academia, or elsewhere. So is that in your mind at all in terms of the E word, employability? Does that crop up?
Yes. Short answer. I do agree that we are doing our students a disservice if we do not give them the opportunity to engage with the digital sphere whilst they're here at Warwick. I don't necessarily believe it should be a requirement. It is up to the students for them to decide what they want to do and how they want to utilise their time at university. Not every student wants to do this kind of work. Not every student needs to. Some are much more digitally capable when they come to us. But we must give them the opportunity to be engaging with this work. If they want to learn more, if they want to engage more, we have to offer them opportunities both within the curriculum and extracurricular opportunities to actually engage meaningfully with this future world.
Thank you. Thank you for that. So can I ask you then, thinking about the project and what you've achieved, can you say anything about the challenges? You mentioned one of them, which was the timescale. But can you say anything else about any other challenges and indeed any lessons that you've learned that might be useful for anyone else trying to attempt something similar?
One of the major challenges I think that we faced in this project is that we did not get to choose when we ran it. And had we been given that choice, we wouldn't have done it when we did. July was not a good time for Brian and I to be running this project. It's the end of the year. There's a lot of exam boards, a lot of work that needs doing in July. Yeah. And fitting this project in around it was incredibly challenging. We are extremely lucky that we had a really, really capable group of students who yeah. were so able to take direction and work independently and work as a team with each other. Whilst Brian and I were off doing exam boards and these other things that were also cropping up in July.
And I'll come to you, Brian, in a second. Perhaps you might have something to comment on this. But what about that? How did you select those students, or were they self-selecting? Becca, and then I'll come to you, Brian.
We advertised through Unitemps, and we had a huge number of applications, actually. I think we had over 100 applications. Is that right, Brian?
Over 120.
Yeah. And the six students that we hired really, really stood out to us as incredibly experienced, very, very digitally capable, masses of experience with pedagogy. We really do have exceptional students here at Warwick. Yes. And we were blown away. I would say probably at least half of the applications were from hireable students, but these six that we hired had such a wealth of experience that they were really, really amazing, very, very capable.
Yeah. Brian, do you have anything to say about selecting those students, all those students, but also challenges and lessons learned?
Yeah, I mean, I think selecting the students was really tough. As Becca was saying, we had so many talented students apply, which was in a sense great to see. I mean, it's always amazing to see what our students at Warwick can do. And I'm surprised, you know, every year I always think the best of our students and then something happens and surprised me and I think even better of them. I'm our students' number one fan, really. So I was really amazed by some of the applications and the CVs that we saw. I was also really impressed with the six students that we did hire, the amount of work and energy they put into it, the way that they worked together, the way they had really meaningful conversations, the way that they kind of managed the project work on their own with us just kind of coming in and helping, you know, around the edges. That was wonderful. You know, in terms of challenges, I think, you know, it feels to me like I've just been working nonstop since April, no break pretty much. Trying to find time to do anything, I think, right now with COVID is really hard. And I think many people are realizing that online teaching takes much more time than we might initially expect. You know, you can create excellent resources, but it does take a lot more time. It takes a lot more thinking, a lot more energy. So to find the time and the space to think about these things is really tough. But I think it's been really meaningful and rewarding just to see the project come together, to see it go up there, and then to see it have an impact on students, to see it beginning to have an impact on staff. And I really look forward to seeing what conversations and discussions can come out of it later. If I can add one more thing, you mentioned the E word earlier, employability. I personally think that, you know, employability is very important with what we're doing, but I don't think that employability is necessarily predicated on the usage of a digital tool, right? To say, oh, look, I can use Microsoft Word or Excel. Well, great, good for you. You know, so can many other people. I personally think that in terms of employability, the really valuable aspect of using these tools for digital assessment is to give students the confidence to have that flexibility and the confidence to learn new tools for themselves. Because in a sense, that's the most that we can do with this pace at which technology, software, hardware is constantly changing, with the pace at which these environments are changing. If we can give the students that confidence to orient themselves in a changing digital world, I think that not only will help with employability, but it's also going to help with the other E word, which is entrepreneurship. If we think Warwick Enterprise is something that's really kind of coming up, they're building out here right now, and giving students access to these digital tools, we're giving students access to start their own businesses, to start their own NGOs, to start their own content creation channels, to do all sorts of things in the digital world, and to be their own self-promoters, self-publishers, and to really, you know, be independent within the world, whatever domain they choose to do that in. And I think that's incredibly powerful.
Excellent. Yeah, thank you for explaining that. I think you're right, by the way. When it comes to employability, it isn't necessarily, is it, the case that you want somebody who can edit a video or produce a podcast, although there are jobs, of course, in those fields. But it's more about that if the only skill you've got is to write an essay you haven't really maybe worked in a team or been creative or thought a little bit differently about information and the rest, then again, we're doing students a disservice, aren't we? So you're right. I'm just thinking before we finish whether you have any general technology tips or advice or perhaps something that you've learned that you wish you'd known earlier.
Say with general technology tips, it's one of the things I tell the students every year in digital literacy. I still do a week every year on HTML and just basic HTML. And one thing I tell the students every year is, you know, even the best programmers, many of them are self-trained. Many of them have learned on their own. Many of them will still look up the basics and basic syntax. Have fun with it. You know, play around with it. Don't see technology as your enemy. Try and see it as something that you can use to do what you want, but also to get your message across, to get a new type of message across, you know, but give yourself that time. And this is one of the things that's really tricky, is creating, especially for staff, but for students as well, finding that luxury of time to play. And I think with any technology, if you're really going to master it, you need that time and that space to be creative with it, to play around with it, to break something, to fix it, not fundamentally break something, but you know, to break it, to fix it, to understand what went wrong. And I think if we try and rush through and we try and overload students and staff, we're not going to see the best possible usage of these kind of digital tools and technologies. So I think it's really important to bake in that time.
Great. And how about you, Becca?
I think the most important thing for me is understanding the importance of sharing best practice in this area. It's not realistic to expect every single member of staff to learn every digital tool, every facet of digital pedagogy. It's about engaging with the learning community and working together to make sure that our students have access to a range of resources across the curriculum, and that we help and support each other in moving forward as a university in this area.
Excellent. Well, I couldn't have put it better myself. I think any opportunity we have for sharing what we do, and in my limited experience, it does seem that teachers, and indeed all of us, like to see what our peers are doing, and we like to borrow and be inspired, or thieve the odd idea from time to time. Thank you very much. Great to speak to you both. Thanks for your time this afternoon, Brian.
Thanks very much for having me, and look out for the official launch of the Digital Assessment of the Faculty of Arts resource next term.
Thank you. And Becca, thanks also.
Thank you for inviting us. It was great to talk to you.
So that's it for this fourth edition of the LDCU Talking Online Learning Podcast. Thanks again to contributors Becca Stone and Brian Brazo. If you, your team, or someone you know has something to share related to the world of online learning at Warwick, then please do get in touch. It would be great to talk sometime. I should reward you for making it this far, so instead of a podcast fact, how about a YouTube fact? This podcast is, of course, racing up the charts, but it has some way to go to compete with the most popular videos on YouTube. Did you know that as of November 2020, Ed Sheeran's The Shape of You video is the third most watched, with just over 5 billion views? Then the track and video Despacito, with 7.1 billion views, is the second most viewed. But if you want a useful, amazing fact to impress family and friends, the number one most watched video on YouTube is Baby Shark Dance, with 7.33 billion views. Pretty amazing, especially as there are only 7.8 billion people on the planet. What will future digital archaeologists make of that, I wonder? Okay, thanks for listening.